Talk Central is brought to you by TomTom Africa, a leading international enabler of accurate location-based platforms throughout Africa, offering innovative, comprehensive, and high-quality digital maps to businesses and governments. For more information, visit tomtom.co.za/geospatial.
I'm Rechard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 127 for the weekend starting 5 June 2015.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, where you'll find South Africa's best technology journalism.
That's right, Duncan. No headlines like, watch South Africa's best animal impersonator.
No animal impersonators on Tech Central, only relevant tech news. On Talk Central this week, we talk about FNB's mobile virtual network operator.
Also this week, Windows 10, Telkom's uncapped, or is it, LTE service, and the low-cost smartphone wars gather pace.
Before we get to all of that, though, we need to pay the bills. We'll be back in just a moment.
The Vox Telecom Cloud is the future of business. Developed from the ground up, it's a turnkey, fully managed approach to the cloud. It offers you guaranteed support, a national network with true redundancy, fully managed services across all layers, and most importantly, a single point of accountability. The Vox Telecom Cloud. It's how cloud should be. To find out more about the Vox Telecom Cloud, SMS your name to 45454 or visit voxtelecom.co.za. Standard rates apply.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
Great, thanks. Yeah, it's been, I think the last time we recorded the show, it was spring and now it's winter.
A little bit of difference in the temperature.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. But lots to catch up on. Let's dive into it. Have you been following the FNB news this week?
I actually have been a bit. Not that I'm actually interested in moving over, but I find it fascinating that the banks are getting into the space and they seem to be doing so quite happily. I would much rather have them focus on the banking side, but I've heard some good things.
Well, it's an interesting move. You're an FNB customer, aren't you?
No, actually, I'm not.
Oh, you're not?
No, I'm not.
Oh, you're with Nedbank, right? Yeah. I'm with FNB. Just to recap for anyone who missed the news, I think everyone must know it by now, but just in brief, they've launched, as everyone is expecting them to, an MVNO, so similar to Virgin Mobile, but obviously it's going to be on a larger scale than Virgin Mobile, or at least FNB is hoping it will be.
Yeah.
They're talking about signing up a couple of 100,000 customers in the initial stages. So they're offering a full mobile network. They've got their own billing platforms, their own customer service platforms, and all integrated with the underlying network, which is Cell C. They're launching on the 15th of June, and you'll be able to, as an FNB client — this is only available to FNB clients — they're pitching it as a value add to the banking customers and saying this is not a profit center for the bank, but a value add proposition to keep their customers sweet and to attract other customers from other banks. Interesting play. I mean, interesting how FNBs and other banks, for that matter, are becoming more and more technology companies than traditional financial services businesses. Yeah. And they're using technology to enhance customer loyalty.
And FNB's been doing really well with their devices. I mean, we all know that little factoid that they are the largest selling Apple devices distributor in South Africa. Mm. And this seems like a natural fit to that for the evolution of it.
Yeah.
I guess the question is, how good is the service? What's the costing? That will obviously play big into their customers'
decision. It's not radically cheaper than anyone else. Maybe it's a little cheaper than the big incumbents, but it seems pretty much on a par with, I think, what Cell C offers.
But if you buy, if you buy devices from FNB and you get a SIM card, you'll get some value add out of that, I guess.
I guess we still need to see that, but I'm guessing the cost of the devices will be the same as they are now on FNB's network, because they already do that subsidy. I think you find that on the bigger networks. I certainly find, and I don't do it anymore for this very reason. I'm a Vodacom customer, for example, and I find the price of their handsets has gone through the roof.
Mm.
If you buy a handset cash from Vodacom, or even look at the subsidy they're giving you, if you can work it out through all the terms and conditions and all the rest of it, and what you're paying each month, their prices have actually gone up quite dramatically. And I think that there's value to be had in doing what FNB's done here. Cell C's done the same thing, by the way, but they're really pushing it hard, FNB. And that's really separating the device from the SIM, separating the device from the airtime. And you're actually going to pay for them separately. There's no integration at all. So you go onto the website, you'll log onto FNB's backend, onto their online banking site. You'll go to the telecoms tab. You'll order a SIM, and they'll say, "Oh, do you want a handset with that?" And you say, "Sure, I'll take a handset with that." You know, order a Samsung Galaxy S6 or whatever. And then they'll say to you, "Well, this is the cost of it. This is how much you're going to pay it off over the 24-month period as a separate thing to the SIM card and the contract bundle that you're taking, or the prepaid SIM for that matter that you've decided to take with your device." So they're two completely separate concepts, and I think it's a good idea, and it's more transparent for customers, and therefore a good thing.
I was just going to say, when you were explaining that, and it's something I find with one or two other service providers that actually do it very well online, and then Afrios comes to mind. You know exactly what you get when you log onto the site. It's got a very good user interface.
Yeah.
And if FNB, I mean, if FNB can get this right, it's going to build confidence within, you know, people that want to take up a new mobile service. Would find more value out of doing something like this because, like you said, everything up front is there in your face. And the mobile network operators don't seem to do that. If I log into my MTN account, I don't even know what I can do in the back end anymore. I mean, I can cancel some services, but there's nothing really substantial that gives me information about my account.
No, in fact, I think, as I was going through the demos with FNB earlier this week, that was my thinking exactly. I thought this was AfriHost on steroids. And my second thought was, well, why hasn't Vodacom, my current service provider, done this yet? Mm-hmm. It's the level of control it gives you in the back end in terms of what you can do. I think particularly on the new flexi month-to-month contracts that FNB has announced, where firstly, it's a month-to-month, so you can cancel whenever you want. Nice. But you can actually change the mixture of your package every month. So if you determine, oh, actually I don't need 500 voice minutes a month, you can simply change that down to 200 more voice minutes, say, and the next month you'll be billed the lesser amount.
That's awesome.
And you can do this every month, so you can change. If you decide, oh, I'm not getting enough data, and it's the case with usually everybody, 500 megs isn't enough, so you just move a slider on the back end of the FNB website saying I want a gig from next month, and it'll automatically adjust.
Brilliant.
And then you decide, oh, actually I'm not really using a gig, so let me slide it back down to like 750 megs, and I think that's brilliant. That sort of level of control over your spend, I think, is important, and it's something that bigger operators, it's a trick they've missed, I think, in keeping their contract customers sweet. And certainly, they've been doing a lot of work in the prepaid space. We've seen these big reductions in prepaid prices, but I think a lot of consumers are unhappy about the fact that they're not really getting looked after.
Mm.
Whereas the prepaid market is really happy because the prices have come down so dramatically. The contract customers are still paying through the nose, and perhaps arguably even more so than they were before. Given the example of Vodacom, the fact that device prices have gone up so much.
Yeah, I think looking at this offering from FNB, it's certainly, if you look at everything they offer, from the devices, to kind of some of their business services that I've looked at, they are becoming a lot more appealing. If you move to them, you know you're going to get 5 to 10 services that are executed quite well. And for looking at the prices, the data also doesn't seem too bad. It's probably a little bit cheaper than my straight-up MTN that I pay on my account.
Mm.
That's why I moved to Afrios for the data, because it was much easier to manage.
Yeah.
And also more cost-effective. It works very well with, obviously, the device strategy, and I think...
It's a natural extension of that, I think.
It is.
You know,
it is.
I think that the fact that they're on Cell C will probably put off quite a few people. There's been a lot of talk in the last year or two about the quality of Cell C's network. Cell C claims that that's been fixed. I've been speaking to Cell C customers who say the situation has noticeably improved. But I think there's still a lot of concern out there about whether you're going to have a lot of drop calls on Cell C and whether you're going to be able to make a call or get access to data when you need it. I don't use Cell C actively, so I can't comment on whether their services have improved in the last little while, but certainly they've been spending a lot of money on their network, particularly here in Gauteng, to try and resolve some of the challenges that they've been having.
Have you tried the data yet on this? I mean, with your data sim, have you...
I have. I've plugged it into an iPhone 6 Plus. The SIM, by the way, comes in three. It's a uni SIM for all sizes,
oh, nice.
So you can just pop out the size you want, including nano. And that works well. I plugged it into an iPhone 6 Plus and it worked straight off the bat.
Mm.
Obviously, Cell C doesn't have 4G yet, so it was connecting to 3G.
Okay.
But just driving around and using it, it was fine. Mm. Syncing my mail and, you know, browsing the web and doing WhatsApp, no problem at all.
Nice. Yeah, to me, that almost seems the data part. So if you buy a tablet or something from, okay, they do more than tablets now, but if you buy a device like that, which you more than likely are able to do, getting a data SIM for that is just another click away, right?
Mm.
Much easier than trying to go and get a data SIM from another operator. Mm. Seems like it's a good fit.
Yeah. So lots of little details in it. I encourage you to go and read the story on the site. We had a very detailed interview with the CEO of FNB Connect. That's Ravesh Ramlakhan, in which he's provided a lot of detail about how the service works and you know, some of the things you can do. For example, one of the interesting things I thought was one of the first questions I had was they're going to do this all online, so they'll dispatch your SIM to you for free via a courier service, so you don't have to go to a branch to fetch it. So my immediate question was, well, how are you going to Rika that process? And the quick response from FNB was, well, we don't need to Rika because we've already Fika'd.
Yeah.
And Fika sits Trump's, above Rika. Yeah. Trump's Rika, so they've got all the information you need anyway, so there is no need to Rika you.
And again, if you're a customer of the bank, they should have all the details already, right?
They do, exactly.
They should have all your stuff already.
They've got your Fika documents. Yeah, exactly. So,
just making it easier. Maybe that's where they're going to pull this off, because it's becoming such an easy service to sign up for.
Yeah.
It's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
If you battle with MTN, Vodacom, or any of the other service providers.
Now, the thing that really I thought was really cool, and I think it's going to appeal to households, you know, parents and children. It allows you to manage the SIMs for an entire household. So you can order you can order you know, and a household needs a lot of SIMs, you know.
Mm.
You know, you personally may have three or four SIMs. Your wife may have three or four SIMs. Your kids probably have at least a SIM each. You then order these SIMs from F&B, and then you can manage their usage on a SIM by SIM level. That's in fact, brilliant. You can give it each a name. So you can have Johnny's SIM, Sarah's SIM, wife's SIM, whatever. And you can manage it and say, well, okay, the kids can get 200 megs of data a month each. If they run out, that's their tough luck.
Yeah, yeah.
And use
their pocket money to update.
Exactly. Well, I don't think you can do brilliant. That. They won't have access to the account. But
sure.
But it's a very clever idea, and it really allows people to control their spending and that sort of thing, and keep an eye on what they're spending on. For a family, I think it makes a huge amount of sense.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, we know that F&B has already sold a lot of devices. Sold devices to people that buy it for their family. I mean,
yes.
The easiest way to get a tablet to your kid is to just
F&B.
Yeah, buy it with
e-bucks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which does beg the question, though, if F&B is able to roll out something as impressive as this, why aren't the other mobile operators, why aren't MTN and Vodacom doing it? You know, tell me that the infrastructure doesn't allow them to do it. Surely they must be able to do something.
I guess they haven't competed with each other sufficiently enough to have warranted them to do this. I suppose if one of them had started doing it, the others would have reacted. I guess this is going to prompt them into developing the proper back-end tools that allow their customers to really manage this. I know Vodacom has been doing quite a bit of work in this regard. They've got that app, the smartphone app,
sure,
and that sort of thing.
Yes.
They're doing some work in this area, but it's nowhere. It doesn't come anywhere near to what F&B has done here with this back end system.
That's managing the family. That's really impressive. I like that. That is a nice feature.
Yeah, it's very cool. And of course, this whole thing is integrated with e-bucks. You know, F&B Connect users get between 15% and 40% of their mobile spend back in the form of e-bucks.
Yes.
So if you're on the top tier of e-bucks, and many people are, you're going to get 40% of your mobile spend back in e-bucks.
Sure.
Which really reduces the cost of the service.
That's also impressive. Yeah. Yeah. FNB is definitely creating a little ecosystem that you know, people never have to leave.
Mm.
Once you arrive, you never leave, right?
Mm. And I think e-bucks is actually the underlying platform that supports all of this. It's that gets people interested in it. I mean, you know, I won't mention the banks, but I left another bank a couple of years ago now for my personal banking. And, you know, I was getting charged hundreds of rands a month in service charges and not getting much benefit in return. I now get paid more in e-bucks every month than I pay F&B in bank charges. So effectively, they pay me to bank with them.
Nice. Yeah, we need to see more of this kind of thing for sure. Making it easier for the customer to manage their accounts.
Mm.
because that'll also curb, I guess it'll curb spending to a degree. But you know, if you're in control of your spend on your online on your phone account, you know, it'll make you. It'll be a lot more fun to use, really. I mean, I know that I don't have to worry about my data bills every month. Or even my phone call. I mean, I don't even know how many minutes I've got left every month. I don't even look at that.
Yeah.
This kind of thing, if you're in control of it, allows you to modify it each month.
And cut your based spending. On your usage. And cut your spending.
Maybe that's why the other guys aren't doing it, because it does allow you to curb your spending.
Yeah. And the other guys rely on breakage so much that it's a big percentage of their profit margin.
And I take it you get free banking with this too. I mean, online banking doesn't get charged data, right?
Do you get charged for accessing the?
Yeah, I mean the data use for banking. Usage.
They didn't mention that. They didn't mention that. So I presume you are billed for that. They did mention that the FNB banking app, you'll be able to make free calls to other FNB banking app users over VoIP. Mm-hmm. I think they've had that already though, and they've cut the cost of calls from the app to any other mobile or fixed line network to 39 cents a minute. So that's a VoIP call again, but that's a pretty good deal as well. So if you're sitting, I think that'll appeal to people in Wi-Fi hotspots. At home on a DSL connection, 39 cents a minute for a phone call.
And again, if you have your family on, then you can phone your family for much cheaper rate. Mm. It makes a lot of sense.
Interesting to see if they're able to link the number that they issue you for your SIM to the VoIP number that appears on people's screens when they're down. I wonder if they're going to be able to do that. I should have asked them that. It's an interesting one. The other interesting aspect is the porting, number porting. That's all automatic as well. Nice. So you simply say, I'd like to keep my number. You type in your existing number, and they say that on average you will have your number ported across FNB's network within 4 to 5 hours.
Jeez.
Maximum of 24 hours in the worst case scenario, but average of 4 to 5 hours to port your number, and it's all electronic.
Don't have to interact with anybody. That's brilliant. That is brilliant. Well done. I hope to see more of this from the other guys
too. No, this is great news, and I think it's gonna prompt the big incumbent operators to. And funny enough, probably Cell C as well, which they're riding on to improve a lot of their services. And really, I mean, I think they're demonstrating here what can be done in terms of a good back-end system. And they've spent a lot of time developing this. You know, they've been talking about doing this for years. And when I was chatting to the CEO of FNB Connect, he said that they spent a significant amount of time making sure that this platform was integrated with their core banking system. It's not some sort of, you know, addition that they've plugged on. It's actually core code in their Hogan banking system, which runs on their mainframe.
Sure.
Well,
again, it begs the question, if they can do it, why can't the other guys? I mean, this really is a game changer. I mean, look what FNB did when they introduced banking apps back in the day. They really spurred an entire industry to kind of get a move on with that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Let's hope the same effects happen after this.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's move on completely and talk about Windows 10, which I've been running for ages now, and the latest builds are really stable. You're running it in a VM.
Parallels, yeah. I haven't actually updated it because I only use it for a select few applications that I need.
Okay.
But it's running stable and solid. And,
My
next move actually that I want to do this weekend is update my the computer that's plugged into my TV.
Yeah.
Because I believe the home theater stuff and the way it displays on screen is much prettier than Windows 7.
Yeah, interestingly, it plays MKV files natively now.
Nice.
So you don't actually have to run VLC anymore.
But we love VLC.
Yeah, true. I've got a soft spot for VLC. So despite that, I still installed it. But you can run just about any video file you want nowadays. And there's only one reason that Microsoft could possibly have put MKV support in there, is to run pirated files. Pirated video files.
I mean, they are going to do it regardless. Let's just let them do it in our system.
In our system, yeah. So we've got a date for the launch at last.
Yeah, finally.
And that's soon.
Mm.
Surprisingly soon. And that's the 29th of July. That's, 6 weeks away? Over 6 weeks away, I think. And I think the code is almost there. There's some bits and pieces, I feel, that are clearly not looking feature complete yet, like the settings pane and the control panel. They're kind of the kind of, I'm not quite sure what Microsoft's trying to do there yet. The new settings menu in Windows 10 looks really cool, but sometimes you're drilling around in there and suddenly it pops back to the old control panel, which looks a bit outdated. I presume that the plan is to eventually have everything in the settings menu.
Well, you can only imagine that they would keep some of that back for the final release and not, you know, not give you... give you everything that looks as good as what the file... You know, you need to look forward to something, I guess. To the tweaks.
The most interesting thing for me is that the Windows Insider program, which you sign up for when you install the technical preview, is going to continue after the release of Windows 10. It's going to be made a permanent thing. So if you're a, if you like to get the updates first... if you're a geek like I am, I want to play with the latest stuff before it comes out. So I'm just going to carry on running the Insider Windows Insider program technical previews. I'm not actually going to bother to install the release to manufacturing version of Windows 10.
So will they? So with that program, I mean, if you, I mean, with your installation of Windows 10, won't it get updated to the final release automatically? Or will that remain a technical preview?
I think it will remain a technical preview. I stand to be corrected on that, but I don't think it'll get the RTM release.
Interesting. It's good to see Microsoft really embracing their techie community. I mean, we've you know, if we think about how we were brought up with computers, I mean, Windows has been that center point. You know, we can fiddle with every part of the operating system, and now they're actually seemingly embracing people doing that.
It's almost like it's becoming more like an open source model, isn't it?
And you can also, I mean, in a similar vein, I can talk about Office. I mean, there's a lot of upgrades for the new Office 2016 for Mac, but it is such a pleasant experience to be able to be part of this early program of it, even though, you know, it's still in pre-release version. It's great to be able to do that.
Yes.
Officially, without having to torrent a leaked version of an early preview or something.
I mean, in the past, you know, Windows would release the new, you know, Microsoft would release a new version of Windows, and you'd totter off to the local retail store and buy it and install it, and that was your experience of the new version. You never saw anything that happened behind the scenes. Now you've got Microsoft developers running blog posts and updates, daily updates on what's going on in the development team and that sort of thing.
I love it.
I had an interesting chat with someone from Microsoft this week, actually, who said that I forget the figure. I think they said that Microsoft has received 800,000 pieces of individual feedback from Windows Insider users in helping develop the software. And a lot of those have come from enterprise users who are saying, well, you know, we'd love to see this feature or, you know, whatever.
And this doesn't work and this works. I mean, that's invaluable, actually. If Microsoft is trying to relaunch Windows to, you know, to be something completely different to what it was before, user input is imperative, because we know what's happened with, well, I mean, we know the story of what happened with Windows 8 and how people loathed some of those features. If they had a program like this for it, they would have had that feedback.
Yeah.
And this is what could potentially make Windows 10, you know, that operating system that we know Windows 4 being, you know, the best platform.
Yeah. But it's going to be interesting to see what sort of adoption it has. I think it's going to be good, given that Windows 7 and Windows 8.1 users get a free update in the first 12 months. I think there's been a bit of confusion about the what that means, actually. Apparently, you're going to have a legitimate copy. I'm not sure how they're going to test that, but you're going to have a legitimate copy of Windows 7 or Windows 8.1. And you have to update in the first 12 months. But my understanding is that it will then be free. You'll get free updates for the lifetime of your device.
Oh, that's brilliant. But I heard initially that they were going to update everybody, even if you didn't have a legitimate copy of
it. I'd heard that as well. It's a bit unclear at this stage whether all those hundreds of millions of pirated copies in China are going to get updated. It'd be interesting if they do decide to just do a blanket update.
It would definitely be to the benefit of the platform, you know. I mean, if they're going to be giving it away for free, it makes sense that you just extend that. But we'll have to wait and see, I guess.
I suspect that because of that free update offer, it's going to be the fastest accepted version of Windows in history. And I think a lot of people didn't go to Windows 8. I think a lot of people were put off by the lack of a start menu and the tile-based interface. It was a very radical move for Microsoft to do away with the start menu. It's back in Windows 10, although it's kind of a hybridized Windows 7 and Windows 8 with tiles in the start menu. But it looks good.
It does.
It looks really nice. I think they've done a good job with the OS. It's still very clearly Windows. And I think Windows 8 in many respects was a knee-jerk reaction to the rise of the iPad.
Yeah.
At the time, the iPad was selling like hotcakes. It was in the ascendancy, and I think Microsoft was panicked. They saw this device from Apple possibly, you know, stealing a large portion of their business. I think that's turned out to be somewhat unfounded. In fact, Apple's iPad sales have gone into reverse. It's still hugely. I mean, there's a huge market for iPad, but it's not a PC killer.
Yeah.
Which I think Microsoft at one stage was probably worried about, and I think that's why we saw such an aggressive move to a touch first, tile-driven interface. It was really designed for tablets more than desktops.
Yeah, exactly.
And Microsoft kind of, you know, it was kind of almost Microsoft was kind of saying screw you to their traditional keyboard and mouse users, which is their main market. And they've come back. They've come back a long way from that that radical change. And you know, I think Windows 10 is probably closer to what they would probably intended to do in the first place. And certainly, I think, a lot clearer to users what they're trying to do now in terms of the mixture of legacy and universal apps.
Yeah, exactly. And with the input from all those beta testers, it's really going to result in a solid performing operating system, I think, without a lot of those things that Windows 8 was criticized for.
Yeah, indeed. I think that it's funny how, if we've spoken about this before, Microsoft seems to go through these waves. They have a good release, a bad release, a good release, a bad release.
Yeah.
I suspect this is going to be one of the releases that, 15 years from now, they're going to be struggling to get people off. Like, they're struggling to get people off Windows XP at the moment.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a really popular release.
I agree. But didn't they also say that this will be the last version of Windows that you install?
Because
every upgrade from here will be an incremental version, right?
Yes.
Or some shape of that.
That's right.
Which I think is great. That's how you need, you know, don't force people into changing an entire operating system. I mean, we know with devices these days, that's just not viable.
Yeah.
Give me a good update and or allow the platform to be updated in components so that you can change certain things.
Yeah. There probably will never be a Windows 11.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It'll be Windows 365 or something.
Yeah. Windows 3.
Or just Windows 10.
Yeah.
Well, they'll probably drop 10 at some point. They may just call it Windows.
Yeah.
Windows as a service.
No, it's good to see Microsoft getting back to that. And in fact, I may go back to running Windows full, permanently on my Mac. It really is that good.
Yeah. All right. So, 6 weeks until the final release.
Reserve your copy now.
But seriously, if you're keen to play around, just go and download the technical preview. It's stable. You can run on a production machine without any hassles. I've been running it for months. I had some issues initially. There was a problem I had with one of the a driver for my graphics card, but that was quickly resolved. And it's rock solid now.
Yeah.
Also, check out the new web browser called Edge.
Oh yes, Edge.
Which has got a very controversial icon, I think. Have you seen it?
No, I actually haven't.
Let me show it to you quickly. Let me just dig it out. Go and have a look if you're listening to the podcast. It's kind of
to Internet Explorer.
I don't know what Microsoft was thinking here, but I mean, it kind of looks like a devil's tail on top, and it's kind of a skewed version of the E from Internet Explorer.
I can only guess that they did that to not confuse too many of the old Internet Explorer users, I guess. It looks similar. I mean, my mom always looks at the E icon and tells me that the E icon doesn't launch.
It's obviously deliberate too, because I think a lot of lay users who didn't follow in tech news, they won't know there's a new browser in Windows 10 called Edge. It's going to be the default browser in Windows 10 though, so they're going to see this in their task tray when the operating system installs, and they'll see the E and they'll think, oh, there's Internet Explorer, and they'll run it and they'll think it's Internet Explorer, but they're actually running Microsoft Edge.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's why they've done this. Why their logo looks so similar.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
To prevent alienating customers.
Because otherwise, Granny's going to sit down in front of her computer. She's going to see some brand new logo for Microsoft Edge. She's going to go, where's Internet Explorer?
Yeah, I agree.
And then she'll go into the start menu and she'll find Internet Explorer and she'll start using that instead of the new one. I suspect that's the thinking behind this.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's a controversial logo. Someone suggested it looks like a hammer and sickle.
It looks like a telephone, actually, the top part of it, if you look at the light.
I actually thought it looked like Zoomer's shower.
It'll never be the same.
But it's a weird logo, to put it mildly, but maybe get people talking.
No, I think it's to keep a bit of that legacy.
I think that's exactly what it is. I must admit, I haven't been using Edge. I fired it up a couple of times and it poked around in it, but went straight back to Chrome.
Chrome is where it's at.
I don't think I'll be using Edge until... I may use it as a secondary browser from time to time, like I use Firefox now. But I don't think I'll be using it as a primary browser until the plugins are there and, you know, everything, all the support
I need. Yeah, I agree. Mm. I agree.
Cool. So, lots of excitement earlier this week when Telkom put out a press release, announcing that, they're going to introduce uncapped LTE. And I think a lot of people were very excited, especially when they saw the price. Let me bring the story up here.
But
There's a big but, unfortunately. But it's not necessarily a deal-breaking but.
No, I agree.
They announced, and I'm just bringing it up on my screen here, that they're going to offer, this is on a 24-month contract, they're going to offer uncapped LTE, so that speeds of up to 90 megabits a second. So that seems to exclude its LTE Advanced network, which they've rolled out in a few suburbs. They're going to offer discounts to first comers. So for each base station where this is being offered, the introductory offer starts at $599 for the first 50 customers.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah.
And then it goes to $699 for the second 50 customers. And then R799 for the final 50 customers. And they're only going to make 150 spaces available at each base station.
That's interesting.
To prevent, overloading the base station.
Which
is a lot about what the limitations of wireless technology.
It does.
But,
if you're living close to a base station, this is a very good solution.
I am very tempted to get this, even though I have DSL. My DSL speeds at home are limited because of the distance from the exchange. Telkom is talking about possibly rolling out fiber in this area, but they've made no commitment yet. The only worry I have here is the 24-month commitment. But $5.99 a month, if I'm in those first 50 customers, for an uncapped, in inverted commas, solution, seems like a pretty good deal for theoretical download speeds of 90 megabits a second and theoretical upload speeds of 25 megabits a second.
Yeah, that's very impressive. But you have to ask, I mean, we know the caveat with... uncapped.
Yeah.
Where do they throttle you? Where's the limitation?
So I asked Telkom for the details on this, and they came back surprisingly quickly with all the terms and conditions. The short version is that basically you can use 50 gigabytes of data on anything you want. But if you once you've used 50, they're going to actually measure the amount of data you use for services like Usenet downloads and BitTorrent up to 50 gig. And those protocols will then be shaped down to 128 kilobits a second for the remainder of the month. All other services will be available at full speed. So you'll still be able to browse the web, stream Netflix, watch YouTube, listen to music, etc. at the full line speed. Your certain services, specifically BitTorrent-based services like, BitTorrent, your peer-to-peer type services. And I think a lot of people use Usenet these days to download content as well through applications like Sickbeard. I think they're specifically trying to target those guys.
Which is understandable, and I don't blame them for doing that, actually. I mean, if I'm a subscriber to this service, I don't want this... my LTE tower or wherever I'm connecting to fall over because some guy is overusing his allocation. So and 50 gigs is a lot for average users.
It is for BitTorrent, yeah. If you don't BitTorrent, then this is ideal.
That is ideal.
And let's face it, probably the majority of internet users out there don't BitTorrent.
True. But you say Netflix will be a service like Netflix won't be throttled.
Apparently, Netflix will work fine even after the 50 gig cap kicks in.
Okay.
So you'll skip Netflix at full speed. The only limitation is going to be on BitTorrent, basically on BitTorrent traffic and one or two other protocols. But streaming will work fine.
Brilliant. You know, that does look like a good offering. The only downside for me is a 24-month contract you have to sign. But
But they do supply you with a free modem and they come and install an antenna on your roof and point it at the nearest tower.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you're going to get good service even if you're not directly under a LTE umbrella.
Yeah. And so, I mean, across the road from home, I've got a Telkom mobile tower. I actually have infrastructure on my roof already to point at this tower. So, I may go for this and keep the DSL.
Yeah, why not? You should be an early adopter. Just do it.
Okay. Yeah.
At $5.99, I'm trying to work.
So you're looking at a 24-month contract. You're looking at what? That's 5,000, 6,000, 12,000 rand commitment, basically. Okay. Just over 12, 13,000 rand commitment.
Look, unless anything dramatically better comes your way, I guess if you get fiber within those 2 years, you might not be as happy when that arrives. But
it's nice as a backup as well.
For the average user, this is
for $5.99. I'd probably be more reluctant if I had to get the $6.99 or $7.99.
Yeah,
I'll probably make sure I'm on their website early that morning to be one of the first to sign up for it. How's fiber going in your area, by the way?
Well, we just heard recently that the suburb of Blairgowrie, we've just done a voting on between Vumatel and Fiberhoods. So okay. Obviously those are the two providers that are pitching for us for the neighborhood. Majority of people seem to be leaning towards Vumatel because there's some sensible guys in the neighborhood that have been saying to us that the only downside with Fiberhoods is it's aerial fiber, which it's not a bad thing, but I think if you're going for longevity of the infrastructure, putting it in the ground is probably your best bet because nothing's going
to be more expensive. Though.
It is more expensive, but at the end of the day, if that service is still going to be, or that fiber is still going to be untouched within 5, 6, 7 years, your aerial fiber, I don't know. I guess you can argue it both ways, but it doesn't really matter. Either one of those would be great as long as we can get 100 meg speeds at home, I'll be happy. Or at least 50, depending on the budget.
Yeah. Anyway, hoping to hear something from Telkom soon, but I may go for this LTE solution. It's the upload speed that appeals to me.
Yes, that is the thing. I mean, even with fiber, if you look at it, I mean, you get what, I think it was 10 meg up at the max. With LTE, you get more, which is...
Yeah, it depends which type of fiber you're using, of course.
Sure. But I mean, that's a service that they're offering, so they're limited to 10 meg up, I think.
Sure. Just go check that out if you want to sign up for the Telkom LTE uncapped in inverted commas offer. I think it is fair to call it uncapped, actually. It's uncapped except for the BitTorrent protocol, basically.
Which is really fine. I mean, let's be honest to you.
Yeah.
If you can stream some stuff and if the YouTube and stuff like that doesn't get throttled, I think you'll still get the benefit of that.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to our winner and loser segment this week. I think our winner, I had a poke around the website to see who was deserving this week, and I think Dark Fiber Africa deserves a shout out for their announcement that by the end of this financial year, which is March 2016, so 9 months from now, they want to roll out fiber broadband to 20,000 businesses around South Africa.
Wow,
that's quite a commitment.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a big step up in investment for them, and I think we'll have a big impact on businesses that get it. 20,000 is a big number for business customers. So they're our winner this week, Dark Fiber Africa. Well done for that investment.
Yeah, definitely.
I think our losers this week, just have a pick on them, in light of the FNB MVNO launch, is Vodacom and MTN for not embracing MVNOs. They've been very reluctant. I mean, they're allergic to the idea of MVNOs, pretty much like they've been allergic to the idea of dual SIM phones. And I think that they're putting their heads in the sand. And I think that, if FNB starts to take off, and I think they will, I think that they will come around at some point soon. Yeah. MTN probably first, I'm guessing.
But I would also like to add something to that. We mentioned this earlier. In my books, they're also losers for not developing the back-end portals for users to effectively manage their accounts.
Agreed.
Because we've had this in other services for 2 or 3 years now. Mm. There's no reason why. I mean, the technology is...
Especially not introducing month-to-month flexible contracts where you can change what you want on a month-to-month basis. Yeah, now, that's a real winner from FNB. I think well-deserved losers for letting a bank show them how to do it.
Those banks.
Cool. What's your pick this week, Greta?
So, the toy that I've been playing with for the last few days, and it's not launched, it'll only be available towards the middle of the month.
Yeah.
And let me just put a disclaimer in. I do some work for a company that sells this, but I still stand by my opinion because I think it is it's a very handy device. It's called the Garmin NuviCam. And what Garmin has done is they've essentially combined a dash camera with a 5-inch navigation device, so in-car navigation device. What makes this interesting is the fact that you can now, having a dash cam combined with your GPS, gives you a few bits of functionality that I think is quite fascinating. Lane assist, so you can, you know, when you deviate off a lane, it'll warn you. When you get to your destination, it actually overlays on your screen your where your destination is. So you can actually see a real-time video feed as you're driving down the road. It'll have a little flag in the property that you want to drive into, essentially. Okay. And when you play back, so when you put this, when you download this to your computer, you can actually have the map and your video feed overlaying. So you can actually, and I think for companies, this could be quite an interesting thing because you can see where the driver's driving, how they're driving, and you can see a video feed of their driving. It's an interesting device. I've only been playing with it for about 3 days now. So, you know, I'd like to see some more of the functionality. But for now, if you, and then there's a lot of people still, you'd be surprised how many people actually have in-car navigation devices still. I like the fact that there's a dash cam in here. So, yeah, the NuviCam, worth checking out. It's going to go for about $4,999. So it's
that's a good price.
Yeah, it's not bad. And it's much larger than...
a huge screen.
Yeah. it's massive. It's massive. Yeah. I'm still a big fan of Google Maps, but I found using this, you know, not having to... You know, having everything... Because I've got a dash camera in my car now, you know, it's a lot less painful to navigate where I want to go. Mm.
Okay. Okay. Good. I've got two picks this week, actually. The first one is a service that I tried out in recent weeks that worked really well with one or two minor hiccups. And it's something called Aramex Global Shopper, Aramex Global Shopper. It's a very cool service. They allow you to... you subscribe to it. You pay a once-off fee. I forget what it is now. It's a small amount. They then give you addresses in physical addresses in a range of markets around the world. I think there are 15 of them or something like that, in the US, the UK, all over Europe, Asia, whatever. And you can then shop at any of your favorite online stores, like Amazon in the US, for example, which doesn't deliver a lot of stuff to South Africa. And you can order the stuff and you can have it sent to your address in New York. And then Aramex picks up the logistics from there and has it delivered to your house.
Oh, wow.
Wherever you want it delivered to in South Africa, and it works incredibly well. So I needed I wanted a new SSD for my desktop. So I ordered one from Amazon, a Samsung Pro 850 SSD, 256 gig, beautiful, beautiful little device. And I ordered it from Amazon, and I got great notifications from Amazon, as you'd expect, saying,
yeah,
your product has been... I selected surface shipping in the US. They said it would take a few extra days. I didn't mind. So it was free shipping. Free shipping to New York. Amazon notified me that it was there. Then Aramex notified me that they'd received this delivery from Amazon and it would be dispatched to you shortly. And about, I don't know, it was probably about just over a week later, I get a notification... or I'm tracking it rather via the Aramex website because they've got a great tracking facility on there. And I see it's arrived in Johannesburg. And it tells you what process it's going through. And then it says clearing customs. So I left it. And, you know, but about 3 or 4 days later, it still said clearing customs. So I thought, no, something's not gone right here. So I contacted them through the website, and they said, oh, there's a payment that's due, and they hadn't notified me about this, so there was a bit of a hitch there. So I'd already paid them for the delivery, which came to, I don't know, it was like, I think it was R200 or something. Well, no, it was less than that, I think. And then there was, I had to pay the taxes on this device, which amounted to, I think, R250 or R300.
Sure.
And then once I paid the taxes, it was cleared immediately, and then the next day it was delivered to me.
Wow.
So apart from the little hitch at the customs, it worked absolutely brilliantly.
I see they use PostNet as well. Is that right?
That may be South Africa. I think that may be the fulfillment partner on the ground in South Africa.
Which is better than the postal service, let's be honest.
Yes, and no. You don't want it to land here and you put it to the post office. No, it'll never get to you.
Because that to me is very appealing. If I know it's not going to touch the South African post office.
No, it doesn't.
The side of it.
Yeah.
This is a very cool service.
Yeah, yeah.
So what, about a week from ordering? 2 weeks?
It was about 3 weeks in total, I'd say. Okay. So it wasn't the world's fastest, but it's select the slowest shipping method from Amazon.
Still more reliable because basically you've got eyes on it all the way.
Exactly.
From
So it worked well. I'd recommend it. And the fact is you get a whole range of addresses around the world. So if you want to order something from Japan, you have it sent to your Japanese postbox. If you order something from Australia, you have it sent to your Australian postbox or whatever the nearest country is that you have a postbox
at.
Or a delivery point at. And it works really well. And what's cool about it is, I mean, there's so much stuff, cool stuff out there that you want to get your hands on, at least at a decent price, that you just can't get in this country. But you can get it on these online stores that don't necessarily ship here.
Yeah.
Amazon is a classic example.
No, this looks like a good solution. I've got a few things actually I need to order. I'll definitely try them out.
Yeah, give them a run. It's well worth checking out. Their local website is aramex.co.za. So go and have a look at them.
And they're obviously a global company.
They're global. Right? I think they're a global company. Yeah.
Yeah. Very nice.
Great. My second pick this week is a rather remarkable new smartphone, and that's the LG G4, which I've been playing around with all week this week.
I can hear the angels sing now.
The most amazing thing about this phone is the screen.
That is impressive.
It is the brightest screen I've seen on a smartphone to date, and it's a 2K display, like the G3 before it, but somehow LG has just squeezed out more pixel density into this thing, even though the screen size is about the same. But it's a really beautiful, beautifully designed phone. Unfortunately, I've got the one with the plastic back. There's a slightly more expensive version with a leather back, which according to people I've spoken to have used it and the reviews I've seen online of it, is the one to get.
Mm.
It comes in different colored leather materials. But it's a gorgeous looking phone. And I think that I think that LG had a real... challenge on its hands bettering the G3, which was already a very good phone. The G2 before that was a good phone as well, but I think they managed to do it. This is a real contender, I think, for smartphone of the year.
Oh yeah, definitely. I've seen some good reviews around there. It's the first time I've actually held it in my hand and looked at it, and it's one of the most beautiful phones I've seen in a very long time.
Yeah,
HTC should take a note from their book, improving their model with each generation, not taking features away.
But my only criticism of this phone is the battery life, which is not great. I think that on heavy days of use, you're going to have to plug it in before the end of the day.
Sure.
Which you don't on devices like the iPhone 6 Plus and the Sony Xperia Z3, which easily last at the end of the day. This one needs to be plugged in. So hopefully they'll address some of that with future software updates. And one thing I have to give LG credit for is bringing out new versions of Android faster than many of their competitors, and I think they're able to do that because it's a very, very basic Android skin. They basically just add a widget with the with the weather and time on it, and do one or other two minor tweaks to it. But it's very close to native Lollipop, and I think the fact that they don't tweak it too much, they don't put too much of an overlay on top of it, allows them to bring out the new updates quite quickly. So hopefully this one will see Android M on it not too long after release.
Impressive, very impressive. I may have to upgrade. Is FNB? Do FNB have them? I can get all my stuff there, apparently.
Haven't checked, but well worth checking out.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's the extended show for this week. Hopefully, we'll be back sooner than we were this time around. As always, if you've got any feedback, we'd love to hear from you. Send us a mail at info@techcentral.co.za or leave a comment on this entry. From Rechel and myself, until next time, take care.
Ciao, ciao.
Ciao.